and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode. I am so excited to have Joe Saul-Sehy back on the show from Stacking Benjamins. Joe, what has been going on? Last time you came on, you sang some really weird song about God bless your underpants. Are you still singing that song today, man?
The bar is high. Like, how do you top that appearance, right?
I don't think you can.
I've been waiting around for you to call me again. And you didn't, so I called you. I'm like, can I come on? And you said, well, Joe, once the restraining order expires, then maybe.
It expired last month, so we're doing pretty good.
I have been super busy. Thanks for asking. We are taking our Stacking Benjamins show on tour, which is awesome. We're hitting, I think, Whitney, we're hitting the same three cities the Beatles hit when they came to America.
Oh, that's nice.
Orlando, Kansas City, and Detroit. Isn't that where the Beatles went?
I mean, I don't know. Sure.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, like, when you look at the map of the U.S., you don't go, Orlando, Kansas City, and Detroit. Those are the three biggest markets we want to hit. But for us, they're perfect. And so it's going to be fun. We're at comedy clubs, and they're going to be cool.
That's amazing. So I love that you're taking the podcast to people so people can actually come hang out with you in real life. Maybe not in the basement this time, but they get a better feel of what's actually going on. I think that's amazing.
It's way less creepy than the basement. So that's, yes, absolutely. Yes. Although you don't have shag carpeting on the wall, no Bon Jovi posters, but you'll get the rest of the experience. Doug will be there, our silly announcer guy. OG and I, we're excited. We've got Chris Costello from Bloom is our special guest host. And then we've got, in every city, we've got a lot of local people. So if you're in Orlando and you're in Kansas City or you're in Detroit, you've got no idea, like, all the cool financial stuff that's going on and even some non-financial stuff. We've got a podcast opening acts before us. So you'll get two shows for the price of one. And as an example, in Detroit, we've got The Debrief, which is a show about arts and entertainment in Detroit. There's so much culture, especially music, you know, a town that's really known for great music. But they go over that. In Kansas City, we've got the Joel Goldberg. Hopefully, we're on, like, final approach with Joel. So, Joel, if you're listening, damn it, tell us you're coming. But because we're teeing you up. I know. But Joel, people around Kansas City know that he's the guy that does the pre- and post-game shows for the Kansas City Royals. And in Kansas City, we're talking, in all three cities, we're talking fintech. But in Kansas City, they're in the middle of this tech week, and they are bringing, NBKC Bank has a fintech accelerator startup, and they're bringing five national fintech companies. And fintech, for people that don't know, are these cool apps that help you manage money better. They're bringing five, and we're going to do, like, one of those Today Show style. There's this one, and then there's this one, and then there's this one kind of segments. That'll be fun. TIAA is going to be there with the Difference Maker. You know, they're 100 years old this year and founded by Andrew Carnegie for a way that teachers wouldn't be destitute in their retirement. And so they're a nonprofit, and they are going to bring somebody who's from a nonprofit in each of the three cities to talk about how these organizations are making a difference. And
what?
So, yeah, it's going to be a little educational, which isn't like us. We don't do that.
You're trying to help people now?
It's crazy talk. No, but it's going to be cool. It's going to be fun. Bring your friends, stackybenjamins.com/tour. And it's only $10.
I know. So. I love that you made it so affordable. That is, I think, everything. So bring your friend. If your friend bails out on you, no big deal. Still go. You'll have a great time. Get lots of laughs and probably meet some cool people. So stackingbenjamins.com/tour. That's where they can go to get tickets, correct?
Absolutely. October 25th, we'll be in Orlando at the Improv. I can't believe I'm saying that out loud, though, that we're playing the Improv. Like, of all the places I could play, you could play someplace big like Carnegie Hall. For us, playing the 300-seat Improv is, like, the best. I think that's awesome. And then in Kansas City, we're also at the Improv on October 9th. And then 2 weeks and one day later, October 24th, we'll be in Detroit at Go Comedy Improv Theater.
That's amazing. I'm so excited for you. This is, I know, a huge, huge project to get off the ground. So I'm really like just thrilled for you. I can't even imagine how exciting it is to see your baby start kind of crawling now.
You know? I know, right? I'm going to cry.
I might cry for you too. Speaking of crying, this was, you know, part of this episode was kind of a fun thing. We wanted to just answer some questions. And I'm so glad that we were able to do this because I've been getting so many questions, Joe, that are just like lining up. So I've pulled a few people on Instagram, on Facebook, and then got some emails from some questions that they had. And the first question that was sent over, I mean, I don't want to make you cry, but it's a very serious one. Are you open to taking some questions?
No, not at all.
I mean, I'm going to have to go there. This one, we're all wondering, Joe. It came from Chad. Chad wants to know if you're ever going to have the funds to move out of the basement.
Well, maybe.
You've been maybe. Saving?
You know what's funny is actually to take this question seriously is that there is actually a time in everybody's life where it makes sense to put your tail between your legs and say, I need help. Right. And moving back to your mom's basement, like we did initially, is something that you shouldn't take lightly. But you should also, Whitney, as you know, only do it if you have a plan to get back out. And I think about this. Another analogy is I've had a lot of friends that went to community colleges. And a community college is a fantastic way to save a lot of money, especially the first 2 years on your introductory credits before you go to maybe a bigger name brand university where you're going to pay a lot more. The problem with a community college, of course, is that there's a lot of people there that don't have a plan. And if you get too into that group of people that are listless and not doing anything, you might lose your way. So don't lose your way going back to your mom's basement. Do it with a plan. And I think that it's going to make it a lot more affordable, a lot more exciting when you finally make it out. For us, I don't know, we might be a lost cause in mom's basement. Of course.
We'll bring you on again next year and see how it's going.
Yeah, that's right. We made our way up to mom's living room.
I mean, that's pretty good. You're moving up. You're doing
that's well. Right. Yes. At least we're going skyward.
That's right. That's exactly the case. Well, I like too that you mentioned there's no shame in doing something that's going to better your financial life temporarily. So if that means living with your parents, if that means getting a roommate, if that means whatever it is for you, there's no shame in that. If that betters your financial life, I think that's actually very respectable. So I'm glad you mentioned that. It's a very good point to bring up.
You think of two things here, Whitney, which are two biggest expenses in your life are your house and your car, your transportation costs. And if you can minimize those two costs, like if you really need to make a change in your life with your money, thinking not about clipping coupons and going to the store, which will save you $1.57. Instead, thinking about where do I live and how can I make that cheaper, I think is a big way to cut costs. Mm-hmm. See, we took his joke. And we totally made it real.
Take that, Chad.
Ha ha, Chad. Gotcha.
So this was another really great question from Ashley. And I know that you've got lots of thoughts on this because you have two twins yourself. So her question was, what are best investments or savings to use for babies or kids wanting to set up college after high school funds? So we know there's a lot of different options. So what did you personally do?
And by the way, when you say I have two twins, I don't have two sets of twins. I have two kids. So just to be clear, most people have twins have two, Whitney. Whitney hasn't had her coffee yet today.
I haven't. I'm still working on it, guys. Bear with. It's been a rough week, okay? It's Tuesday.
Yeah, well, what do you think about this? Because you teach this stuff all the time.
Yeah, the option that I tend to like for the most part are the state 529 plans. I think they tend to be pretty good. The only caveat is you almost have to force your kid into for sure going to college, which sometimes bothers me. And I know there's ways around that, but the 529, I think, is really easy for people to understand. I would say the thing to watch out for on those are the fees. Sometimes the fees can be quite high. And a lot of state plans, especially if they're pushing going on rates and trying to help other students go on to college, a lot of them will have a yearly fee, which is really kind of cool.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm right there with you. That was my first thought, Ashley, when you asked the question was 529 plan. Because you look at Whitney, how expensive college is.
Oh my gosh. It's crazy.
This is the second question, and we've talked about college twice now. That's how expensive it is.
It's a big deal. It is a big deal, for real.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think my co-host on Stacking Benjamins, OG, did the math on this. And when your baby's born, for your average state college in a generic state, it's about $400 a month if you want to pay for the whole thing. And wow. While there's ways to make that less expensive, $400 a month for 18 years is just so
steep.
Yeah. So 500, so 529 plan, I think, I totally agree. Best way to go. I'll give people a couple resources on 529 plans. I like this place. Savingforcollege.com gives you a great overview of the cost in your state. Some states, by the way, offer a state tax break if you use their 529 plan. Some states' plans, though, as you know, Whitney, they suck so bad.
They're terrible.
That it makes more sense to go outside your state. And you might be listening to this going, well, wait a minute, my kid's probably going to go to an in-state school. For the majority of states, it doesn't matter where they go to school. You can use the Alaska plan, which is a very good plan, by the way. And I'll get to, I'll give people three recommendations on plans that I like. You can use the Alaska plan, and you could live in New Hampshire and never once go near Alaska and just use the Alaska plan. So don't worry about the state that you're in. Besides the state of denial about your kid.
There's the dad jokes. There it is.
We started already. The three plans I like. Number one, in Nevada, there's a great Vanguard plan. Vanguard is a fantastic 529 club product. A lot of their products are fantastic. I like pairing that plan with this cool place called U Promise, and you can buy it through U Promise. It's the letter U, promise.com. And the neat thing about that is U Promise is a marketing organization that wants to watch you shop. Now, they don't want to watch Whitney Hansen shop. They want to watch female, age X, makes Y amount per year. They want to kind of put you in that category. If you worry about that, don't use U Promise. But if you're like me and you really don't care, because I think the Russians have all my information already anyway, what I like doing is... not just me using U Promise, but members of my family that don't have kids, they sign up their credit cards. You can sign up any card you want. So I sign up my cards that already have reward points, sign up my U Promise, that get U Promise points as well. And then I get U Promise points on top of my airline points on a credit card. And what happens is when I go to places that U Promise works with, they give me a few pennies into my kids' account. My kids now, by the way, are 23. And I think I had about $500 in both of their accounts without paying any attention. If I had paid attention, like I hear these stories about people getting a couple $1,000s because they actually look at the U Promise site. I totally didn't. Accidentally ran into $500 for both of my kids. I also like the Alaska plan, which is through T. Rowe Price. That's a good one. And Fidelity already had a good plan called the Unique Plan through New Hampshire. I liked that plan before, but now Fidelity has slashed the fees on everything in the last few weeks. So Fidelity's unique plan in New Hampshire is really good too. So those are my favorite three.
That's amazing. So you did the 529 for your two sets of twins.
My two sets, yes.
the two sets. So you
don't give me less hair than I already have.
Goodness, right? I can't imagine. I cannot imagine. But so you did a 529 for the girls. What happens, Joe, if you have extra money? So say they went to community college, they were hacking their way through. What happens with the money at the end?
Well, and I said, just to be clear, I didn't say I have two sets of twins. I was clarifying that I only have two kids. I have one set of twins.
I know you have one. Now everyone's like, what does he have? How many kids?
I have 18 kids and I live in a shoe.
All right. And he lives in his mom's basement. Here it is, guys. Here it is.
That's right. Big Catholic family. Seriously, my dad has 16 brothers and sisters. So.
Oh, for real?
Yes, for real. Yeah, 17 kids in my dad's family.
Oh, my gosh.
I have cousins all over Southwest Michigan.
That's kind of handy for traveling, though. You can just go visit the fam and see the whole entire United States.
There it is. Bam. Fantastic. That's amazing. But your question again, I totally missed it.
You're totally fine. So with your girls, when you set up the 529s, if they were really super active and just hustling and maybe doing scholarships and all kinds of stuff to pay for college as well, so that you oversaved for their education.
Yeah.
What happens to the money at the end of that?
Good question. Number one is that you, if you get scholarships, which people worry about, you're allowed to take the money that you got in scholarships out without a penalty. So that's good.
Got it.
The second thing people forget about is that your room and board also qualifies as expenses. And a lot of times that can be kind of expensive. So don't forget all the things like books, food while juniors at college, their cost of their apartment, whatever it might be, mm-hmm. those costs also count. If there's still money left over, to your point, you can pass it on to another relative. So my kids can take their money and they can pass it on to their kids, let's say, and it becomes the Salcy High Family Education Trust. So we can do that. We can also pass it back to me. So if I decide that I want to take, let's say, cooking classes, if it's an accredited program at a higher institution, higher learning institution, I can use it for anything. So flight schools might be in there, golf school might be in there, cooking colleges might be in there. There can be a lot of different things. If I just want to get my writing more crisp, maybe go to comedy school. Some of my negative reviews on iTunes would say, go to comedy school, Joe, please. If it's accredited, you can do that too. So you can flexibly move it around the family and not take the penalty. The penalty only is on the money that it earns, as you know, Whitney. It's only on the money it earns, and it's a 10% penalty if you decide to take it out.
That's amazing. I think it's such a cool option. So Ashley, hopefully that gave you a better context to where we think you should put your money. Of course, talk with a professional and see what's going to work best for your financial life. We don't know all of your details, but you know, that's a pretty cool way to go.
Can we dig into one other thing that she might want to do if she doesn't want to do 529 plan?
Absolutely.
Well, I can't tell her what to do, but I can tell her what I wouldn't do. And and that's this. A lot of people, they go, well, you know what? I don't want this to be for college at all. I want this to just be for other stuff. Do not, Ashley, do not give your kid the money and put it in their name. And the reason for that is, number one, at 18 years old, it's their money. And if you have been 18, you might know that even if you were a responsible kid at 18, you might not have done the best thing with that money. I was 18. It would have been bad. It would have been horrible.
Same.
Now, some of my clients back when I was a financial planner, what they would do is they realizing they've made a huge mistake, they would just realize that their kid didn't know the rules and they did. So when it came time to get some of that money out, they'd say, hey, Junior, I need you to sign this piece of paper. And they'd say, what's this piece of paper, Dad? And Dad would go, well, just sign it. You want your money for college, don't you? And the kid would go, oh, yeah, I want my money for college. So they'd sign the piece of paper that said that this account that they own, that Dad doesn't own anymore, Mom doesn't own anymore, that they're taking the money. And they just hold it over their kid that their kid has never Googled this. But
yeah, read the fine print, kid.
Absolutely. Yes. If you're a 17-year-old listening to this, read the fine print. Because that might be some beer money. No.
That's good to know. That's really good to know. And how long were you a financial planner again?
16 years.
Oh my goodness, forever. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I'm an old man, Whitney.
Oh, really? I mean, your shirt didn't tell me that. Another day.
Yes, I'm an old creepy man.
Okay, so next question. And I think this one was really good because I think anybody that's tried to pay off debt has known that it is really hard to stay focused, especially if you're on a 5 or 10 year plan for repaying off your debt or even 2 years. It can feel like a long time. So Catherine asked, how do you stay motivated when paying off debt? I've got my opinions, but I kind of want to hear from you first. What do you got?
Well, I think that, you know, first of all, Catherine, staying motivated is the tough part. I'll tell you what happened to me when I was a financial planner. I would have people come into my office excited about setting up a debt strategy to the point that, you know, it's like when you decide, damn it, I really want to lose weight or I really want to start an exercise program. You get super motivated to the point that you're annoying. And you cut your budget to the bone or you're working out every minute of the day. And about a week and a half goes by, maybe 2 weeks, maybe a month, maybe even 6 weeks. When finally you go, you know what? I've been so great at this budget thing. Let's buy a big screen TV.
Yep.
Just to celebrate. Or let's go out for a big steak dinner, whatever it might be. And you blow the whole damn budget, everything that you did. So everything first in moderation is number one. Build in some stop gaps. So what I like is, number one, giving yourself an allowance for money that you're not going to budget that will help you get through the cravings, which are going to come up. So as an example, great diets have a cheat day. And what I learned about my cheat day on my diet was 6 days a week, I followed the program. The seventh day, I could eat anything. After about 6 weeks, I realized I felt like crap on cheat day. Like, cheat day sucked. And all of a sudden, my body started rejecting all these foods I thought that I really liked. The same thing's going to happen if you give yourself some money. I like video games. So if I give myself a video game budget, I'm not going to end up at GameStop or online buying the next hot video game, because I know in 3 weeks I'm going to have enough money in my allowance to afford that. Yep. I also know that historically it's your behavior that wins. And so Dave Ramsey talks about a way to set up your bills in order so that you pay off the smallest one first and the biggest one last. That's called the debt snowball. I like that. I think you can do that just by setting up milestones for yourself. Yeah. Throw yourself some kind of a little party or celebration when you hit milestone one, milestone two, milestone three, because it's not about looking at the elephant. It's about, you know, one bite at a time.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So I have to echo, I agree completely. The only thing I will say, Catherine, is if it depends on your personality type here. So for me personally, when I was paying off my debt and I was working towards paying off my 30 grand, I knew that I personally cannot stay that motivated for very long. So I kind of lose focus. So I knew I had to be on a very, very fast track plan, which meant working two jobs, meant working a ton of hours and having that bare bones budget. But that allowed me to hustle and sacrifice for 10 months instead of 2 or 3 years. So then after that 10 months, I suddenly felt like I was the richest person in the world. I had so much money. It was crazy. So I'd say, know your personality type. What kind of person are you? Do you have to really hustle and sprint to get it done? Or are you more of that moderation kind of approach?
Can I jump in there too, Whitney? Because yeah. I think you did something else from my perspective. People often look at minimizing expenses, but increasing your income is way easier than a lot of people think.
True.
And when I had lots of debt, I was listening to this radio guru, you know, 140 years ago. And I remember this guy saying, "What are you doing at 3 a.m?" And this woman he was talking to on the radio that I was listening to, she's like, "What are you talking about? I'm asleep." He's like, "Well, you just told me you want to get out of debt. Why are you asleep at 3 a.m.? Why aren't you working that second job?" Yeah, so the fact that you did that, I think, is absolutely brilliant. But studies even show asking your boss for a raise, your boss generally, I think the number is something like 30-35% of the time your boss will give you a raise if you just ask.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Like how much money we leave on the table because we don't ask.
Yes. Yeah. So I love this idea of fast tracking it, but anyway, back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know for me personally, I could not be on the 5-year, 10-year plan. It doesn't work for me. I just lose motivation. And I think most of us do lose motivation. So to kind of build on what Joe was saying as well, build in systems so that you are actively working on it without having to think about it. So the more decisions you have to make, the less likely you are to actually make the right decision because you get decision fatigue. So really focus on, what are my systems? Is everything automated? Does it work on autopilot for me so that you're not expending a lot of energy on that decision-making process?
Well, and this idea, Whitney, that you casually brought up around decision fatigue, that's a whole podcast on its own because yeah. It is a real, real thing. And the way to stave off decision fatigue is to keep listening to the money nerds. I mean, surround yourself with this surround sound that keeps you on track. I listen to podcasts to stay on track is one example. I also, just to give you an example that's totally off this topic, I never wanted to run a marathon. And we moved from Michigan to Texarkana, Texas, and my friends all happened to be marathon runners. So I started hanging out with them, and within 3 months, I was just running some of their shorter runs with them. By 6 months, I was running all their runs with them. Within a year, I ran my first marathon. I've been here almost 10 years, and I've run 12 marathons.
That's amazing, Joe.
But it's purely, Whitney, who you surround yourself with. That surround, you talk about being motivated, keep that surround sound going. Because when I hear people that paid off tons of debt, like when I'm listening to your show, Whitney, and I hear about people paying off lots of debt, I hear these success stories. A lot of the time it's about the techniques, but also it's about listening to this person going, well, if they did it, I can do it too.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I like that. I think that's a really good point because you're spot on. Even when I was working on paying off debt, that was one of the things that I did. I was obsessed with personal finance and listening to, at that time, Dave Ramsey was about the only one around. So I was like, oh darn, you know, I got Dave's perspective. But even that, it was really helpful to hear people's stories and see, I guess, build some normalcy around that. And I think spot on. I think that's really, really good advice. Catherine, hopefully that helps. Our next question, Joe, comes from Lisa. And I know that you and I both probably experienced this. Her question is, how do you budget when your income is different every month?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know, right? It's so normal.
Yeah, this podcasting income stream is very consistent.
I'm sure. In fact, I know.
Yeah. Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
Yeah, I can go first for sure. So if you're not an entrepreneur, let's say you're in a job where maybe you're a commission employee, so sometimes you get huge bonuses and your base pay might be a little bit smaller. Or maybe you are a server, so you're working nights and weekends, you're hustling, you're maybe a cocktail waitress. Like, there's so many different options for variable income. And even though your income is very different, I know this because I was an LTech through undergrad. My job, some days I made $0, some days I made $250. So it was really up and down. But what I learned is that even though my income was different, there was still a pattern in there. And so if you look back on your data, and hopefully you have enough months of data that you can find some normalcy there, but if you can see that on average, you make $1,000 per month, then that's what you can start to use to budget and to start planning. If you're a little weird and you get a little scared, just go a little bit lower on your income estimates like me. So I would pick 800 instead of 1,000. But that's kind of the way that I approach it. Joe, what about you? What do you do?
No, the same exact thing. Because when I was working with clients, I had lots of clients that had this situation. We would put enough money in a reserve. We build up enough money in the reserve to be able to go two or three, quote, paychecks. And then we determine what the paycheck was going to be. And we divorce your income from your expenses. A lot of people think that your income and your expenses have anything to do with each other. And if you think about it, they don't have to. No. Which is pretty powerful there. So looking at what the person needed to spend and making sure that over the course of maybe a year, they were pretty sure they were going to make at least that money and probably more. Mm-hmm. We would have money on this up-down basis go into this other account and then set up an automatic deposit every 2 weeks or every month or whatever the budget period was of the same amount into their checking account to spend money so that they had a consistent income stream and it was easier to budget.
Oh, so smart. That's an awesome idea.
And that was it. So just coupling that with exactly what you said, Whitney, taking those two concepts, I think, and putting those together gives you exactly what Lisa's looking for.
Dang, Lisa, there you go. That's a great way to, I love that. That's perfect. Let's move on to our next question. This one is, they didn't want to be named. And I understand personal finance is a little scary for some time.
She who will not be named.
It sounds like asks. Harry Potter, right? Right. I did a really dumb thing 2 years ago and leased a brand new car. I'm so over car payments, but feel stuck because I have leased. Can I get out of this or am I screwed? Car leases. Joe, have you ever leased a car?
I have leased cars. I used to think back before I knew better that leasing cars was definitely the way to go. Not for me, it was funny, but for my spouse, because Cheryl is incredibly smart and is great at what she does, but driving is not her specialty. And I often worried about her along the side of the road by herself. And when you lease a car, you get all the positives that come with the new car. Yep. So the chance of it breaking down, all that stuff. So we used to lease cars for her. And now we purchase newer cars that she's going to be in. And I've got a 225,000-mile Trailblazer that is consistently on its last leg, always on its last
every
leg.
Every year.
It's just, everybody wonders, is this thing going to die while I'm in it? And the answer is not yet, but
maybe.
Yes. But for the person that doesn't want to be named, first, it's a great lesson that for most people, leasing isn't the best option, and it's difficult to win financially with the lease. I understand why some people have to do it. Like if you're a real estate agent, and I understand that the look of a new car all the time helps sell a house when you're ferrying people around. So for that person, if it's part of your job, okay, I get it. For the rest of us, no. I mean, and every financial expert says, no, it's probably not a great idea. You might be stuck, but here's what you need to do. You need to find, and there are online forums where you can do this, you need to find somebody to sublease your car from you, to take it over. And you're going to have to check with your leasing agency about how to actually, the mechanics of getting that done. But you might, if you can find somebody else to lease it from you, basically, to finish out the lease, that you can transfer the lease to them, that's the way out.
Yep. And that one probably makes more sense if you're closer to the end of the lease. If you are closer, or excuse me, earlier in the lease, if you're closer to the end, it might be best to just write it out and not have to worry about some of that. But if you just started leasing and maybe you're 6 months in out of a 5 or 6 year lease, might be worth it. The other thing that I'm seeing a lot too is sometimes you can buy out of the lease, you can get out of it. The downside is that is crazy expensive. Yeah. So they're looking at residual value of the car. There's lots of penalties and fees for doing that. And most of the time it results in people having to take out a small personal loan to cover the difference of the leased amount. So it's messy. And I think Joe's spot on. If you can avoid a lease, probably do that. Of course, that's very individual decision and it depends on your lifestyle. But for the most part, don't rent your car, own your car, and maybe drive like Joe and have, you know, $225,000 and see. It's like a fun game. You never know when it's going to break down.
It is a game. But that's cool is that, I mean, I have a career where my car can break down and I don't have to worry about that. If I've got a mission critical job where I have to worry about getting to work, I might drive one that's a little newer. So
yeah,
that's your true. Mileage may vary, Whitney.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just to give you guys some context, I retired my 2001 Toyota Celica after 10 years of driving it with just shy of 200,000 miles.
Oh, and that's awesome.
The only reason I retired it is because I wanted an SUV for camping. So that was the only reason. Otherwise, I'd still be driving it.
And yeah, mine has had a cracked manifold and it always seems like it's not in the right gear. But it gets me around town.
You know, it does the job, right? That's all you can ask sometimes. So, Joe, it looks like we've got time for probably about one more question.
And let's
do
it.
More of a discussion. And I think this is really important to talk about. So this comes from Christina. Christina says, I love a good millionaire next door story. So many of the hot stories I'm hearing on podcasts or reading are sensationalized FIRE ones, FIRE, financial independence, retiring early. Like I'm 30 years old, retired, have $1 million in the bank and travel the world full time, hashtag goals. Or I save 75% of our income. That's laughable for most people who can barely pay their bills month by month. Sometimes I think these rock star stories can be detrimental or demoralizing for those working their tails off to pay off credit cards, student loans, and contributing to their 401ks. I love the bravery behind this because I think that this is such a lot of us have probably felt this way, but never felt the courage to actually say this. So Christina, props to you, my friend, for being brave enough to call this out. And I agree. I think it can be demoralizing. But Joe, I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, our mutual friend, Tanya Hester, wrote a great piece on her blog about how a lot of the FIRE blogger community have to stop lying to their readers. And I think she used the word lying, which is that, listen, you've gone from working this other job to now you're making six figures teaching people how to be you, but right. You're not talking about the fact that you're working a new job running this blog, teaching people how to put their feet up when you're not even putting your damn feet up.
Right.
So Christina, I'm totally with you. Sometimes I roll my eyes because I'm in the industry. Whitney and I have kind of a front door look at some of these blogs and it's not the glamorous life that they make it out to be. Which is why I think staying motivated for me is more about what you're writing about. There's a guy, Daryl Kirkpatrick, who has a really neat blog called Can I Retire Yet? And he's a guy, I think Whitney, Daryl retired at 55,
nice.
which is early. And it's funny, I remember when I had Daryl on the show, initially the downloads for that show were not that high. And some of the responses I got back was, really? You didn't retire at 40? You didn't retire at 35? I'm like, as a guy that worked in the trenches in financial planning for a long time, retiring at 55 is more of a realistic retirement that's still awfully damned aggressive. Like it's incredibly aggressive. And I find Darrow's writing and his strategies, much more to the point of what Christina's talking about, which is how do I get there maybe a little earlier, right? How do I tweak it a little bit, which is why sometimes some of the big names, and I hate to point to the big names because they already have plenty of readers and listeners, but people like Clark Howard, who teach you just how to make these little changes, or somebody like David Bach, talking about how you can cut out lattes just to have this little shift that might make it. Those things I find more exciting. Those little hacks, yeah. I find those sometimes more exciting. So I'm, what do you think? Do you get disenfranchised by some of this writing where you're like, really?
You know, yeah. I think I used to, but I've been working really, really hard on my mindset and coming from a place of abundance and optimism instead of, you know, seeing that stuff and immediately being turned off by it. So I used to read that kind of stuff and be like, please, that'll never be me. And usually that's when we think that, when we feel off put by something, it's because we can't relate to it. And so instead of being to a point where I'm like, I don't relate to this person or this story, I try to view it from, that's cool for them. My situation might be different for sure, but what can I learn from that? What's in their story that could be applied to my life? And I usually find that usually works. So if somebody's talking about how they've got millions of dollars and they are 30 years old and they retired early and they're traveling the world, cool. What can I learn from that? That may not be exactly what I want my life to look like, but there's some little nugget of wisdom there. And so I think maybe find the nugget and not focus so much on that's not me. I can't relate to that person.
Much, much healthier point of view.
I don't know it works.
I tend to get cynical too fast.
I think it's normal though.
I'm like, really? You and your spouse made $250,000 a year. You found a way to live on $100. Found a way.
Like, how did you do such a thing? I live in Idaho. How did you? That's a good point. I think you should have a healthy level of skepticism for sure. But I think anytime you see people that are getting results that are maybe not the norm, there's something in there that we can all learn from. So I don't know if that helps you. Maybe it does. But Christina, that's something that I personally like to do. So I don't feel so bogged down by that comparison syndrome of I'll never be there or they're not my situation.
No, and I like the idea of techniques, which might be part of my obsession with fintech. Mm. And this idea that I like hearing how these fintech developers found something usually that affected them and said, how do I make this better for other people? Like, I like gamifying things. So I was talking to Walter Cruttenden the other day. He's the guy that created Acorns, which is a cool app.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And now he's created this new one called Blast. And Walter is a guy I believe he's in his 70s. And Walter likes playing video games with his kids and his grandkids. And because of that, he set up a way where you can play video games and also save money at the same time. And I thought it's so phenomenal. Those are the type of stories now that, to Christina's point, I've kind of transferred to. Like these people that go, you know, how do I take my video game addiction and actually make it work?
I'm getting concerned for you, Joe.
That's right. Yes. How do I do that? I'm not addicted to video games. I love board games much more than video games.
Same. What's your favorite board game?
Oh, right now it's this game called Viticulture, where you are, everybody has a winery and you're trying to make your winery go from nothing to stuff. So you plant the plants, you bottle the wine, you put it on boats, you give tours of your winery to make money, and you invest in more workers. It's a fun game.
That's amazing. That's so cool. So how do you find these unique games? Is it a game store or do you go to a website?
Well, the first place I go to, the number one place for board games, now we're into my nerdery. Now this we're in my
it.
Wheel.
Now we're getting it.
We should have spent the whole time here, Whitney. I love this website called Board Game Geek, and BoardGameGeek.com. I think they have, last I looked, and this has been over a year ago, Aldi, the guy that runs the site, said that over 2 million people a day go to Board Game Geek looking up different board games. And they have these lists, and you find this whole world of other cool board games that you've never heard of. How about you? What's your favorite game?
Oh, it depends on the day. I actually recently was playing Old School Monopoly Junior, with my niece and nephew. They spanked me. I lost hard, but it was really fun.
Now, here's the thing. So Monopoly Junior, and once again, this proves what a game geek I am. I'm in. If you go to Target today and look at Monopoly Junior, I don't like that version of the game. There's an older version where it was a theme park. Was yours the theme park version?
Yeah, it was the theme park one.
That's an awesome version. That one, it's when so I fun. When I did TV back in Detroit, every year we do a holiday segment about games to teach kids about money.
Oh, cool.
And Monopoly Junior, that version of the game is so good at teaching kids that, wow, the fact that this bill has a number 3 on it, which I don't know why there's a $3 bill, but that's a whole different thing. This says the bill has a 3 on it versus a 1. These different bills mean different things. Like, my kids got it from that. So love that version of the game.
Yeah, I had to find it at a thrift shop, but I was pretty stoked because I was going to flip it and decided to keep it.
Well, and what's cool is if you look at flipping it, if you go to Board Game Geek, that version of the game is now worth a lot of money. So,
oh, I might change my mind then. Money talks, man. Money talks.
Yeah, screw these kids I'm playing the game with. I know. They don't need an education.
You play real Monopoly. It's okay.
That's right. If Whitney gets an extra, 30, 40 bucks in her pocket, that'd be great.
I'm pretty happy with that. That's coffee for a little while.
Yes, absolutely.
Joe, this has been a ton of fun. I appreciate you taking some time to share everything that you've been up to. I personally am stoked for your events. It's going to be amazing. StackingBenjamins.com/tours. $10 tickets, you guys. $10. You can afford $10. So I hope you go support Stacking Benjamin's podcast, connect with some really amazing people, and you get to hang out with this guy. I don't know if that's a pro or con, but
I don't know either. I'll try to wear a better shirt than I wore today.
Yeah, would you?
That's our own personal joke.
I know. No one will know. But Joe, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for hanging out.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks everybody for the questions too. This was awesome.
All right, guys, another week in the books. What did you think? Did you enjoy this episode with Joe and I answering your questions? If so, let me know. Screenshot this. Tag me on Instagram. Tweet me. Instagram me. Facebook me. Whatever you've got to do, let me know that you have been enjoying this content. If you like it, we will definitely be doing some more of these types of episodes in the future. Thank you so much for hanging out. I appreciate it. I love your support. And if you haven't left a review and subscribed to the podcast, what the heck are you waiting for? Go do it today. You will love it. And that's how you get the latest episodes directly into your favorite podcast player. Thanks for tuning in. I will see you next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye.